Welcome to special election coverage on Route 51, leading into the August 9th statewide primary. Wisconsin Public Radio is presenting a series of interviews with primary candidates for state and congressional races. It's all part of our ongoing commitment to ensuring voters have the most comprehensive information possible before casting their ballots. To hear interviews with candidates from around the state, you can go to WPR.org/election22. That's WPR.org/election22. You can find voting information at myvotewi.gov. The primary election in Wisconsin is August 9th. Today, we're featuring candidates running for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District and the state's 87th Assembly District. The 7th Congressional District is the largest in the state geographically, covering 20 counties in the northern half of Wisconsin, while the 87th Assembly is one of 99 districts in the state, representing residents in portions of northwest Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 7th U.S. Congressional District is currently represented by Tom Tiffany, a Republican who is challenged by fellow Republican David Cornelius. Mr. Cornelius is here to speak with us today about his candidacy in advance of the primary. David, thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me, Shireen. It is an honor to be on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, tell us about yourself and why are you running?
Well, a little bit about myself. I am the father of four wonderful children, ages 14 to 27, three boys and a girl. I have a beautiful fiance, and I have spent the majority of my time in the North Woods of Wisconsin. I was born in Duluth, but raised in Rhinelander, spent some time in high school, college in Madison, and then moved back and have been an educator, was an educator in the North Woods for 27 years and recently semi-retired.
And
the reason why I'm running, I'm a moderate, and I don't believe that the moderate voice is being represented. I believe that on both sides we have some, you know, radical right representation or some extreme left. But I think most citizens in the 7th District are moderate and would like to, get rid of some of the dysfunction and discord in our government.
So if you're elected, what would your top priority be?
Well, to get things done. Right now, with the filibuster, we have, whether at the state or federal level, gridlock. So, I believe as a moderate that, and as moderates, we have views on both sides of the political parties, and it's our role to deepen understanding of a challenge, explore solutions that work for all, and find compromises and get bills passed.
Let's talk a little bit about the economy. There is so much economic uncertainty right now, record high inflation, ongoing recession fears. What do you think Congress could do to turn things around and ensure the country is back on the right track economically?
Well, absolutely. And I think we are getting back on track economically. As I stated about kind of what I would like to do in Congress, the first thing is we have to broaden the understanding of inflation and what has caused some of these struggles. One has been market instability, and that was caused by what's going on in Europe. What can we do there? Well, the world depends on Ukrainian agricultural products, Russian oil and gas. And so we need to find other avenues for that, increasing our exportation of agricultural products, having the Saudis and OPEC increase their oil production, which was reduced during the Trump era. And then understanding that inflation also has been caused by a rapid increase in job growth and demand, which our supply chain was not ready for because our economy was shut down. So you see the gas prices coming back down because we're increasing supply and along with other goods. And that really had to do with our supply chain. Many people, in the trucking industry retired from their jobs. You saw all the ships lined up outside of Long Beach, California. So our supply chain was not ready for the rapid restart of the world economy.
I'm going to ask you flat out, do you favor a federal law to either nationally outlaw or nationally protect abortion access?
I believe Roe versus Wade should not have been overturned. There should be a federal law that protects a woman's access to abortion. I personally am pro-life, but that's because my partner and I had that choice. And I believe that in less government interference between partners, less government interference between a doctor and a woman, and the ramifications of not having that, you know, leads to other precedent-setting cases that were based on Roe. So I absolutely believe that there should be a federal law. We can't have different things going on in every state where a woman might be held, charged with a felony in one state but has access in another state. That is that is nonsense.
Well, in the light of that decision and several other landmark opinions, there has been a lot of discussion that has centered kind of on the makeup of the Supreme Court. I'm curious about your opinions here. Do you think that the Supreme Court should undergo any kind of changes that have been suggested, perhaps age limits, term limits, or a shift in the number of justices? Do you think that there's a better way than what we're doing right now?
Well, number one, I think that the process that has been in place needs to be followed. If you think back to the Obama era, he nominated Garland 10 months, and one side said, no, you can't do it during an election year. But then when Ruth passed away 2 months before, you know, the election, and actually when balloting had already started, a candidate was rushed through. So, you know, that was a swing of two candidates, where if the actual process would have been followed, we would have had a more balanced court. Also, we have justices that under oath said that they would support the law of the land and did not. So I think that, you know, there are avenues for when justices violate their oath or, you know, their testimony that was under oath. So you have that. I would definitely, again, for solutions, explore the problem with folks that are in the know and explore solutions at work.
What do you think should happen then if a justice goes against what they say in the hearings? Is there a remedy that you think would be appropriate?
Well, I would follow the laws that are on the books for that. Mm-hmm. I believe that other folks have been held accountable to if they have not told the truth under oath. I guess you could, you know, what happened to President Clinton.
Sure. Well, what, if any, changes do you think should be made to the Electoral College system? I mean, we've had elections that have raised these questions, where a president is elected with, a popular vote that is less than the electoral vote, and they still become president. Do you think that the electoral system is broken, or is this a system that works the way it's supposed to?
Well, that's an interesting question that I don't necessarily have the answer for. But some of the things that, you know, that I think about is, you know, both sides have, say, won the Electoral College but not the popular vote. Or, basically what it comes down to is it's all or nothing. So in Wisconsin, if it's, you know, a tight race and a candidate wins by 2 points, all the electoral votes go to that candidate. I mean, maybe we do it by proportion, but, I do believe that our system has been working, but I'm always open to other solutions that may make things work better.
In June, Congress passed its first gun control bill in decades. What steps would you take as a legislator to decrease gun violence? It's a big problem in America, but still upholding the right to bear arms. What's the balance?
Well, again, I'm running as a moderate Republican. I am a gun owner, sport shooter, hunter. And it's about time we start looking at some solutions that work to decrease gun violence. And there is so much more that we can do, and there's so much more that's being done around the world that works at decreasing gun violence. And I'm not for taking away any guns. An AR-15 is not an automatic weapon. It's a military style in that it looks like an automatic weapon, but it is one pull of the trigger, one bullet. The problem is that an AR-15 can have a high capacity clip with 30. Now, when I go hunting with a semi-automatic weapon, one pull of the trigger, one bullet, my clip has 3 in it. Right.
Sure.
So, and most gun violence actually occurs with small arms, but some of the, you know, the mass shooting has been with the AR-15, but it's the high capacity clip. So let's not take the weapons away, but do we really need a clip of 30? Also, looking at poverty, looking at mass incarceration, looking at mental health, looking at supports for substance abuse challenges and mental health. So we have a start here, but it's just a start.
What do you think is broken that could be fixed? I mean, we do have a start, but what about background checks and red flag laws? What are your thoughts on those?
Well, I think the red flag laws are part of the new legislation, along with some increased mental health support. And we shouldn't stigmatize folks with mental health supports. I mean, 1 in 5 adult Americans has a mental health challenge. But we need to increase the support for folks and access to mental health supports. There's a real shortage out there of therapists and psychiatrists and things like that. There's also a real challenge with access to alcohol and drug treatment. A living wage for those struggling in poverty, ending mass incarceration so we're not having so many people come out of our prison systems and not be able to find a job, and the recidivism rate is so high. Yes, definitely increase background checks. Look at increasing the age to 21. I mean, we know that a young adult's brain is still developing, and so looking at that. So there are several other things that we can look at for decreasing gun violence maintaining the Second Amendment.
There's an interesting proposal, a bipartisan proposal that's being just floated right now that would require gun owners to have insurance. What do you think about that?
I would rather see something like all guns be sold with a trigger lock.
Ah, I see. Okay.
You know, what that reminds me of is now we all physicians are required to have insurance, which is like helping to drive up our healthcare costs. Mm-hmm. So that's a thin line to tread on. So I would think more along the safety route. Increase gun education, trigger locks.
Great. What about health insurance? We were just talking about insurance, and what do you view as the government's obligation, if any, to help American workers secure health insurance?
Well, I believe that it should be a right of Americans. We do have Medicare in Wisconsin, Badger Care with veterans, COBRA, that works. However, what we know from, again, talking with healthcare individual professionals is that those systems do not fund enough. We also know that we have extremely high prescription drug costs. So, people are going to Mexico for dental work. They're going to Europe for orthopedic work. They're going to Canada for prescription drugs. Do we have some of the best doctors? Yes. Do we have some of the best universities educating these doctors? Absolutely. But we also have a healthcare system that is at the bottom of all industrialized nations. Higher mortality rates, a system that is flawed for people of color, lower life expectancies. So, we need to look at other systems that are working. We need to look at lowering costs. We need to look at probably increasing the pay to the medical field for Medicare, Badger Care, COBRA, things like that. We need to look at what physicians are having to pay for liability insurance, which again is passed on to the consumer. So I think that we do have some systems that work that could be expanded, and cost could get lowered.
Do you think that
access increased?
Do you think that Congress could play an active role in making that happen, or is that up to the private sector?
Well, we've had the private sector, and that has led us to where we're at. You know, we have made our health a for-profit business. So let's look at the results, and let's look at other systems that have better results and lower costs.
What do you think the biggest issue is facing Wisconsin right now, and issue or issues? And what do you think Congress could do to address those challenges to help Wisconsinites?
Well, let's talk about two things. Number one, I think, you know, as a conservative, I believe in a smaller government, less taxation. I believe in supporting the middle class and small businesses. So I think that our tax rates need to be adjusted. We need to lower the bottom four brackets by 10%, and we need to look at increasing the taxes for those that make more than $50 million to get back to a fair tax system that doesn't place the burden on our shrinking middle class and small businesses. So that's one thing that would definitely help folks in the 7th District. Another thing is environmental. Places like Rhinelander and Wausau are struggling with having clean water. That is ridiculous in this day and age, right? So the incumbent voted against the PFAS action of 2021 and of 2022, which would have provided $200 million for aid. It would have put PFAS, on the dangerous chemical list and more monitoring. So, I mean, we have wells being shut down in Rhinelander and Wausau. We have, you know, my fiance lives in Wausau. She has to have filtered water. And now the city is going to have to spend millions of dollars on a new treatment plant. And, you know, the PFAS action of 2022 would have helped get clean water and help cities deal with that problem in the 7th District.
Let's shift gears to immigration. It is generally understood, no matter Democrat, Republican, both sides of the aisle recognize that immigration reform at the federal level is necessary. What specifically would you do to change the current immigration system?
So in 1905, and we have the copy of the Ellis Island book, my great-grandfather immigrated from Finland and signed the book at Ellis Island, who he was, where he came from, where he was going, what his trade was. And then he went to Minnesota and became a farmer. And that has been the history of the United States of America, the melting pot of the world. People coming here for work, people coming here seeking asylum from war-torn or terroristic governments. And so, again, we need to look at the actual problem and have solutions aligned to the problem. So, one, people are coming here for work, okay? So, and we need workers. Mm-hmm. We in Wisconsin and in the 7th depend on foreign workers in agriculture, in the tourism and service industries, et cetera, et cetera. And closing the borders has hurt our economy in the 7th District. So that was not a solution that worked. Did not work for those workers coming here, and did not work for the people of the 7th that needed those workers. So we need to expand, you know, the visa H-2B program. Further, we cannot have folks seeking asylum from terroristic countries not being able to cross the border and sitting in camps in Mexico being terrorized by drug lords and cartels. We have accepted people seeking asylum for hundreds of years. So we need to get back to being able to do that. Now, if that means more border workers and more ports of entry, et cetera, then that's what we need to do. But closing the borders and building a wall is not a solution when we need workers and people want to work, or when people are seeking asylum.
What about illegal immigration? What would you do to stem that?
What about illegal immigration?
Yes. People who come
here. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, the illegal immigration is because we don't have the systems to support legal immigration. They're coming here to work. They're coming here for asylum. So we need to increase our systems to be able to support that, like increasing the H-2B visa program, like having more ports of entry where people can, you know, legally enter.
So making a path for these people.
That might be cutting red tape. Maybe, you know, as I said, my grandfather and most of our relatives in the seventh that came over and did not have to wait months and months and months and years to legally enter. Now that doesn't, you know, that is a different route than the route to citizenship, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Which they're, you know, but having, we need more ports of entry, reduce red tape so we can have folks come get a social security card, get a driver's license. We know who they are, where they're going, what occupation they want to find, because they want to come here to work and we need workers.
Earlier in our conversation, you mentioned mass incarceration, and mm-hmm. And I'm curious your thoughts on that. What would you do to reduce that mass incarceration that we are seeing in America?
Well, we have to look at our systems. I mean, our healthcare system does not do as well for people of color and people coming from poverty, nor does our justice system. So, you know, we need to take a look at the whys of that, better representation for those folks. We have to take a look at why somebody that might be middle class and white does not get a jail term or as long of a jail term as somebody that is poor and colored. For the same, you know, in front of the judge or the jury, for the same offense, but the person that is middle class and white gets a lesser sentence. Things like people that are in jail for law offenses, for marijuana related offenses, we need to look at if incarceration is really the solution. You know, mass incarceration started in the 80s with the quote unquote war on drugs, and we went from having 700,000 in our system to now like close to 4 million. So, and then when they come out, they can't get benefits. They have a hard time getting a job. So how is that benefiting us as a society? And I'm not saying anything about those violent criminals or things like that. You know, I'm talking about the lower offenses, and I'm talking about those folks that appear before a judge or a jury who are have a lower socioeconomic status or are of color and get a stiffer penalty. We need to look at those things and have less people incarcerated. We need to do a better job of getting folks treated for mental health or substance abuse, if that's been a causation of their crimes. And then get them better reintegrated into society and the workforce when they've done their time.
We've got about 2 minutes left together, and I want to just invite you to take this time to tell voters about yourself and what separates you from your opponent, what you want voters to know when they head to the polls.
Well, my opponent, the incumbent, is more aligned with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and the former president than he is with the moderate folks of the 7th district. That is why I'm running as a moderate Republican to represent the citizens of the 7th. I feel that the citizens of the 7th are more of a moderate citizenry, and I would best represent them. I had 27 years serving this whole area in education. The last 24 were non-union. I was a consultant. I had to abide by business principles. I had to meet a demand with a good product, quality service, or I didn't have a job. So I got to support families and schools and districts across central and northern Wisconsin for the last 27 years. In my local community, I've been active. I've helped start an education foundation. I helped folks understand school funding. I started a camp for kids, helped start a camp for kids on the autism spectrum disorder and their families and siblings. So I've been active in the community and worked with folks from all sides and political views. And that's what I would do as the representative for Wisconsin 7th District. So folks, come. I encourage moderates to vote in the Republican primary for David Canelius for the Wisconsin 7th.
You're listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seward, thanking our guest, David Canelius, who is challenging fellow Republican Tom Tiffany for a seat in the 7th U.S. Congressional District. Tom Tiffany, the Republican congressman who currently holds the seat, has served the district since 2020. Prior to his tenure in the U.S. House of Representatives, he was elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly in 2011 and the Wisconsin Senate in 2013. Mr. Tiffany succeeded Sean Duffy in Congress, winning a special election against Democrat Tricia Zunker. Today, Congressman Tiffany talks with Rick Ryer about his candidacy for re-election.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to join you, Rick.
Would you please share briefly with us your background and why you're seeking re-election?
Yeah, so I've lived in the Northwoods for over 30 years now. Grew up in western Wisconsin on a dairy farm. My wife, Chris, and I owned Wilderness Cruises up on the beautiful Willow Flowage for 20 years. And I was a dam tender, the dam man, up on the Willow Flowage for 29 years. And in 2010, I decided to run for elected office, went into the state legislature. I was there for nearly 10 years. And then when Congressman Duffy resigned his position, I filled the balance of his term, and I'm serving my first full term representing the people of the 7th Congressional District in northern and western Wisconsin.
And what would you say would be your top priority if reelected?
Top priorities are to turn around what has happened here in America. I mean, you look in less than 2 years, we went from energy independence to energy dependence, where our president is now begging the Saudis to drill for oil. We see a border that is that is basically non-existent at this point, with millions of people coming across our southern border and coming into our country illegally and bringing the fentanyl and the human trafficking with it that is really harming our society. All you have to do is talk to the local sheriffs, and they'll tell you about the great damage that's being done as a result of the fentanyl and methamphetamine that's coming in across our border. And we need to turn those things around. Also, inflation is the biggest story at this point, with record inflation that we haven't seen for nearly 50 years. And we need to stop the deficit spending to do that. And that's really, we know what's wrong, Rick, and we've seen what's been going wrong here for the last year and a half. Now we need to fix it, and I'm going to propose solutions to do that.
Well, speaking of inflation and the massive economic uncertainty, ongoing fears of recession, what specifically can Congress do to turn things around to ensure that the country is on the right track economically?
Yeah, I would say three things definitely need to happen. One, don't take on more debt. We've seen unprecedented amounts of debt that have been taken on by the country. That is what's driving the inflation. In fact, President Clinton's former economic advisor, Larry Summers, warned President Biden a year and a half ago, don't pass the $2 trillion stimulus bill because it is going to unleash inflation. It has. Stop the deficit spending. We need to get people back to work. We've incentivized people to not work, and we need to turn that around. Third thing, get control of energy prices. We'll bring down inflation almost immediately if we get gas prices back down to under $3 a gallon, where it was just 2 short years ago, $2.50 a gallon. And home heating has, my home heating bill, as well as many of my neighbors, has almost tripled now. with the cost of propane the way it is, and we need to get back to energy independence. We do those three things, and we'll take a big bite out of inflation.
Tom, would you favor a federal law as it relates to abortion access?
So what we saw recently with the Dobbs decision, Congress could act, but we're returning it to the states. And I do think that's the proper place for it to go, is to the states. And I just think about my tenure in the legislature. It was just 4 or 5 years ago when I was in the state Senate. We voted on a 20-week bill that recognized that, you know, with medical technology changes that we've seen since the Roe versus Wade decision, which is, what, nearly 50 years ago now, medical technology has changed so much that we can save babies when they're to 20 weeks and older, and that's 20 weeks plus of gestation. So we can save those babies. And so I think that there's good common sense things that we can do, and we should be looking out for women's health. I think about the pregnancy centers that we have, including the one in North Central Wisconsin. I think, for example, I don't know that it should come from the federal level, maybe, but definitely from the state level, where we could help them to get help for a woman that is in need.
And speaking of the Roe v. Wade decision and other landmark opinions, much talk has been centered on the makeup of the Supreme Court. Should the Supreme Court undergo any kind of changes, such as an age limit or term limit or a shift in the number of justices? Do you see that, or is that something that you've been talking about or hearing about in Congress?
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary. I think the reason we're seeing it is the mainstream media, and I'm exempting you that from that, Rick. you see it from the mainstream media, and of course, Nancy Pelosi and the leadership out here for Democrats, they're saying we have to pack the court. We have to have a new Supreme Court. Why are they doing that? Because the decisions are contrary to what they want to see happen. Look back 30 years ago when the decisions were as they wanted them. They never talked about expanding the Supreme Court. There was no talk of that at all. It's just that when the decisions run contrary to what their political interests are, then they want to pack the Supreme Court. It's something that is unnecessary.
What, if any, changes should be made to the Electoral College system?
Well, I don't think there should be any changes to the Electoral College system, especially if you come from Wisconsin, and it doesn't matter what your political affiliation is, you should not want the Electoral College to change, because you're no longer going to see those presidential candidates coming to the state of Wisconsin. They will ignore us. They will be on the coast. They'll be in New York, Florida, Texas, and California trying to gather votes because we are such a small state. The Electoral College gives small states like Wisconsin clout. If we remove the Electoral College, it hurts us in Wisconsin.
Congressman, in June, Congress did pass its first gun legislation in decades. What steps would you take as a legislator and your colleagues to decrease gun violence while upholding our right to bear arms?
Yes, so I voted against that legislation because it is unconstitutional, and I believe it will ultimately be struck down by the Supreme Court because it infringes on people's Second Amendment rights, and also it puts in place red flag laws, which presumes a person is guilty and they have to prove themselves innocent. That's contrary to our jurisprudence here in the United States of America. But I think there are things we need to do. We have a lawless country at this point. We have prosecutors, including down in Milwaukee County in Wisconsin, that are not prosecuting violent crime. They're using low or no bail. And as a result, we're seeing crime skyrocket in America. We need to get control of that. The second thing is, we sometimes have law enforcement, including the FBI, that are spending more time on other things than controlling the potential for crime. For example, you look at the Parkland shooter down in Florida a few years ago. The FBI was warned about that, and they never acted. And we need to make sure that law enforcement is following through when appropriate, to make sure that those people that make it clear that they're a harm to their neighbors, that they are dealt with. And I think about specifically in the state of Wisconsin, we have something called Chapter 51, deals with mental incompetence, and it allows people to be interdicted before they harm others. We do have laws on the books in the state of Wisconsin that can deal with someone who may be mentally unstable, who needs to be, who really needs to be, the community needs to be protected from.
You mentioned the bail system. Do you see bail reform as something that we need to be looking at seriously?
Yeah, I introduced a bill that prosecutors need to prosecute, and while it doesn't directly cite changes in bail, it requires prosecutors, district attorneys across the country, to report how they're going about doing their jobs of charging people. Because we've seen so many examples of this where prosecutors have gone weak. Look at, even in San Francisco, their district attorney was recalled recently in such a liberal bastion of San Francisco. Those people are sick of crime. Los Angeles, the same thing is happening where their district attorney may be recalled. And we have the district attorney in Milwaukee County who let the Waukesha Christmas Parade killer loose on low bail. In fact, he said when he first started his job that the way I do my job may cause the loss of some innocent life. That's just the way it's going to be because I'm going to change how I go about doing this. We really do need changes to this low and no bail that is being used. And big cities across America, I mean, people really need to step up in these big cities if they want their cities to be safe again and decide if they're going to be tough on crime or not.
I'd like to turn a little bit towards health care now. What do you view as the government's role in, or if any, in helping American workers in health insurance?
Choice, competition, and transparency. Those are the three things that we really need to do in regards to health care. We need to offer people more choices. That's not happening now as we see this great consolidation in our health care industry. We're also seeing that with pharmaceuticals. Something that I've done a 180 on, I used to not support reimportation of prescription drugs. I do now because we need to be able to get control of these prescription drug costs, and we need competition, and that's not happening at this point. And part of the reason for that is we have such a heavy hand at the federal government, where the federal government is taking control of people's health care decisions. We need to allow greater entrepreneurialism that will allow that competition. I think about local clinics that have been started up in northern Wisconsin. I can think of a few communities, Rhinelander, Medford, other places that have these little small mom-and-pop clinics like we used to have the family doctor. We need more of that. And then we need transparency. One of the great things the previous administration did is put together an executive order that said, we need transparency in healthcare costs. And some of that is moving forward. But if we would do those things, choice, competition, and transparency, I think we can offer more affordable healthcare because it does continue to be a real problem.
Your role as representing the 7th District here in Wisconsin, I can imagine you hear from your constituents, your staff, hearing from constituents every day practically about the issues they face every single day. What do you see and what's been coming out of those conversations as the biggest issue or issues facing the state here, and what can Congress do to address these challenges?
People are alarmed of the direction that our country is going in. And they're alarmed that in just 18 short months since January 20th of 2021, when President Biden was sworn into office and he promised unity in our country, and that simply has not happened. You have a border that is absolutely on fire at this point. Millions of people coming in, people being flown all over the country that are not citizens of our country that are here illegally, crime out of control, not being dealt with. And then, of course, you have the inflation and high energy prices. I mean, for example, with the high energy prices, people go, we were just energy independent a couple years ago. How could we get to this point so fast. And so people are just alarmed about all those things, and they are also alarmed about some of the social issues. For example, when there's this movement to have boys to be able to play girls' sports, people simply reject that. We had a portion of the American Recovery Plan, $2 trillion bill that set off this inflation, that specifically discriminates against certain farmers because of their skin color. Only minority farmers can apply for certain loan programs. That runs against the culture of all of us in the state of Wisconsin, where our party, the Republican Party, was started in 1854 to end slavery. That is why the party was formed here in the state of Wisconsin. And then they see this discrimination in a bill. People are very alarmed about some of those issues also. But the number one thing that we're really hearing from people is inflation.
You mentioned illegal immigration, and that led me to think about, okay, it's understood on both sides of the aisle that immigration reform at the federal level is necessary. What specifically are you working on, or what would you do to change the current immigration system?
So there's some really good ideas out there as far as how to deal with this. But if you look at what happened, the border was largely under control. My first trip that I made to the southern border was just after I was elected in May of 2020, in early June of 2020, went down to Arizona, saw the wall being built, and the Border Patrol was talking about, you know, we've been able to really make progress here under the Trump administration. Fast forward, January 20th, 2021, first action that President Biden takes is he ends Remain in Mexico, he starts catch and release, and then he stops the border wall from being built. If you just reverse those three things, restart the wall, reinstitute Remain in Mexico. If you're going to have an asylum hearing, you have to wait in Mexico in order to come here. That will stop many people from making this trek from countries from all over the world. And then also restart building the wall, and you will get control of what's going on at the border. It's proven. It was being done 2 years ago, and it can be done again. It is not rocket science to be able to do this. It's really a simple group of measures that can largely get control of what is happening on our southern border.
You alluded to this briefly a little bit ago. The U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the world, with a rate that has increased more than 500% since 1970. What, if anything, should Congress do to reduce the number of people behind bars?
Yeah, actually, if you look at, what was it, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, President Trump, this is one of his signature issues, is he wanted to de-incarcerate hundreds, if not thousands, of people at the federal level, and that did happen. So there, for those people that believe that that is a good thing to be done, there was progress that was being made. Now, when you see these prosecutors that are so weak on crime, they're actually being very counterproductive because there are more people saying, I can live a life of crime, and I will not pay a price for it. And at some point, we have to once again go back to having good policing, fund the police, and then make sure that our prosecutors are doing their job to disincentivize a life of crime, because we are incentivizing crime at this point with these weak-on-crime prosecutors in big cities across America.
In the next remaining minutes, what separates you from your opponent, and is there anything else that you would like voters to know about you and what you're looking forward to if you are reelected as they head to the polls?
Yeah, so as far as my opponent, I know very little about him. Everything I understand, he's a fake Republican, is not a Republican based on some of the information that he's put out there. So if people want to vote for a real conservative, a real constitutional conservative, they're going to vote for Tom Tiffany. And I would ask people for their vote. I'd be very grateful for it. It's been it has been a real privilege to represent the people of the 7th Congressional District. And I'd be happy to comment on what I think is important going forward. Number one, we got to get back to fiscal responsibility. If we're going to end this inflation, we got to stop the deficit spending. I came into the state legislature in 2010 with a $3 billion deficit in Wisconsin. We turned it around in less than 10 years. We need to do the same thing in Washington, D.C. We need to get back to producing American energy for the American people to bring down the cost of energy for people to be able to heat their homes and drive their cars. We need to get control of the border. I just talked about how we can do that. It's not hard to be able to accomplish that. And we need to get control of crime here in America. And these things are all very doable. All we have to do is reverse course on some of the issues where we went awry in the last 18 months.
You're listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer. I'd like to thank our guest, Congressman Republican Tom Tiffany, who is seeking another term to represent Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for the time, Rick. And it has been a great privilege to be able to represent the people of northern and western Wisconsin.
This is special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio, where we are offering candidates in the August 9th primary an opportunity to talk about their candidacy ahead of the election. I'm Shereen Seward. The 87th Assembly District of Wisconsin comprises all of Rusk and Taylor counties and most of Sawyer County, as well as neighboring municipalities in Northwest Marathon County and Northwest Clark County. It includes the cities of Hayward, Ladysmith, and Medford and contains the Lacouture Reservation. Michael Bubb is a Republican who is challenging the incumbent candidate, James Edming, also a Republican. The winner on August 9th will face Democrat Elizabeth Riley for the seat in November. Michael, welcome and thank you for joining us today. So tell us about yourself. Why are you running?
Well, I ran for the Assembly seat 8 years ago. I lost by 19 votes. And at that time, candidate Edming said he'd serve one or two terms. But then now he keeps saying one more and one more and one more. And that's fine, and that's his choice. But the real reason why that I'm running is I think our state government is a little bit broken, including our federal government. And I just think we need some changes. We need to think differently about how we do things. I think a lot of people are unhappy with the elections. If you're a Democrat or a Republican, people seem frustrated with the elections. I think the election commission with a 3-3 tie almost constantly just as a non-functional body that needs to be revised. I've been working on a broadband for Taylor County. Rural internet is a major issue up here. When the schools were closed 2 years ago, education didn't slow down for our students. It stopped. They had Chromebooks, but they couldn't connect. And, you know, the state keeps talking about rural broadband, but not much happens. My opponent's been talking about it for 8 years. I started a committee on the Taylor County Board. We're building a broadband network, and we're going to have broadband to all of our residents by the end of 2024 for $50 a month. So I think sometimes you have to take a different approach. You got to look at problems differently than you have in the past and try and make a difference. And so that's why I'm running. I think I can do difference. I got 23 years experience. I've been a school board president. I serve on the city council. I serve on the county board. I think I have a lot of experience, and now I want to take that to Madison and try and make a difference for the 87th District, but really for all of rural Wisconsin.
Let's talk a little bit about the economy and inflation. That inflation is on everyone's mind right now. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation, fears of a recession? What legislative steps would you take?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, everybody would like an easy answer, and there's not an easy answer. One of the challenges that you have in rural Wisconsin, we have a lot of farmers. We have people who have to drive a good distance to work. So clearly the gas prices are having a huge impact on us. I mean, I really think is that the state should look at maybe suspending the gas tax, especially for farmers at this time, to try and help them through the well, they're through the planting season now, but now they're tending the crops. So they're going to have to harvest them. I spoke to one farmer that said that he may probably have to reduce his herd because he can't afford – he can buy the feed. He can't afford the transportation fees he's being charged to have the feed delivered to his farm. And so I think we have to look at what can we do for the fuel in the short term? Because it's not going to just drop tomorrow dramatically. So I would suspend the gas tax, especially for agricultural needs, and then maybe look at it for the rest of it. And I understand that that could hurt the road budgets down the road, but maybe that's a good place that we could use the surplus at right now that the government has.
What about bipartisan cooperation? Where do you see opportunities for cooperation on the big issues like natural resource management, dealing with PFAS in the drinking water? The government appears to be very divided. How would you manage that?
Well, okay. Luckily, I've just been endorsed by Barb Larson, who was served in the State Assembly for Medford. I've been endorsed by Murray Williams, who served in the State Assembly. And they both tell me stories of how they used to work together with Democrats. Republicans and Democrats would sit down, maybe have dinner, have lunch, and try and find common ground. It seems now we spend more time working on what we disagree on than what we agree on. And so I do think we have to get back to finding out, you know, we're not going to agree on every issue, and that's okay. But where can we find common ground to move forward? Northern Wisconsin tourism is a lifeblood for like Hayward and Ladysmith. We need to protect our waterways. We need to protect our natural resources because that's why people come up here and they want to visit here and they spend money here. And so I think like the Knowles grant that we used to have that where we protected natural resources, I think we have to continue that in the state of Wisconsin. I think we have to look at ways that we can still keep people so we can have clean water and clean air, but we got to be careful not to have so many regulations that now, you know, farmers can't farm. And, you know, mm-hmm. like the DNR sometimes are worried about the length of a pier over worrying about, you know, the quality of the water. And that boggles my mind. But I do think we have to get back to looking for areas of agreement instead of just trying to be opposite all the time.
What about abortion? This is something that is on the minds of many people across the country. What action should the Wisconsin legislature take in the state in light of the recent Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade?
Well, again, that's another tough question. I am pro-life. And I'm pro-life for two reasons, and they're both events that happened in my life. When I was in second grade, my mom lost a baby during childbirth. And I remember watching my dad carry that coffin from the church to the cemetery. And I couldn't understand why somebody would want to, you know, end the baby's life on purpose. The devastation caused to my parents was unbelievable. I've been married to an amazing woman for 42 years. She's adopted. A person long time ago decided to have that baby. That baby grew up to be a wonderful young lady who I met at UW La Crosse. And I'm married to her for 42 years. So I'm pro-life. I really think we need to protect life. I think we got to do a better job of educating people on how maybe to avoid unwanted pregnancies. Ending the life of a baby should only happen when, you know, I mean, I don't think that we should do that. So the way to prevent it is that we need to educate people, provide better health care, better information to avoid unwanted pregnancies, then you don't have to have an abortion.
You were a school board president. So what about education? Strong schools, a key to a healthy economy and the workforce. So what should legislators do to ensure students have access to the highest quality primary education possible?
Well, absolutely. And I really fought for, you know, that, you know, our teachers know best, and somehow, I think on a national level and maybe on a state level, we've lost sight of what is education sometimes. I was taught math, reading, you know, science. I was introduced to different topics that, you know, expanded my ability to think and reason and look at outcomes. Now I get concerned about when we're talking about politics, we're talking about social issues, and our kids are falling behind in education. COVID was devastating from a health standpoint, but it was more devastating to kids. Medford School District, we were fortunate. The year after the spring shutdown on COVID, our schools were open. There are other schools up here that were closed. Those kids are struggling. I mean, the fact of the matter is that they're behind in math and they're behind in reading. And so I really think we have to invest in, you know, what is the objective? What is the goal of education? And I think it goes to teaching people about math, science, English. As they grow up, they're going to develop their own opinions about what's important to them. You know, I'm not saying that social issues aren't critical and important. I'm just not convinced that that's where they belong in first and second grade, where maybe we need to be teaching kids on how to write and how to add and subtract and how to make, you know, decisions and to think about problems and come up with solutions.
In our final about 30 seconds left, just share what you want voters to know about you. What do you want to leave them with?
Well, I keep saying it's time for a change. I mean, if you think our government is working great, then you probably want to keep the incumbent. If you think we need a change, I think the only way you can get change in Madison is you need to get different people down there. There's 29 assembly reps and senators that retired or resigned or are running for different positions. And with some people that are running like me against an incumbent, there's going to be over 30 new people. We have an opportunity for real change in Madison. So I guess I would say, if you want change, you want to see the government maybe go down a different path, August 9th, vote for Mike Bubb for assembly.
Thank you, Mike Bubb, Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 87th Assembly District, for joining us today. The primary in Wisconsin is on August 9th. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. Incumbent James Jimmy Boy Edming did not respond to our invitation to appear on this program. This has been special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. The 2022 Wisconsin partisan primary is August 9th. You can find voting information at myvotewi.gov. The site provides details on statewide voting locations, absentee voting, special ballot initiatives in your area, and voting registration information. That's myvotewi.gov. To hear today's primary election coverage, as well as more coverage from around the state, you can go to WPR.org/election22. That's WPR.org/election22. Remember, August 9th is primary day in Wisconsin. I'm Shereen Seward. Thanks for listening.